This is Dr. Tar.
This is Professor Feather.
This is the Midnight Gadfly.
And this is Dr. Head. And you are experiencing...
Radio. Hell no.
All right. Geezers and Weezers, Croakers and Strokers, today's family-friendly episode about Project Hail Mary. It's one of the more current movies that we've ever done, I think. You know, we've done a handful. This is a movie that's gotten a lot of buzz here in the last couple of months, and I think a lot of it just has to do with the tone of the movie, and I think that's, you know, one of the reasons I chose it was because, you know, we've got a lot of this kind of really dark stuff that goes on and a lot of things, you know, that kind of attract us. You know, like I watch true crime stuff and afterwards I'm like, man, I need a palate cleanser, something serious, you know.
I need a sugar cookie.
Yeah. And so Project Hail Mary it stars Ryan Gosling. And then pretty much everybody else is actors that I'm not real familiar with.
It's him. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's pretty much him. It's about a problem that they were having with the sun that has an organism that is feeding off the light of the, or covering up the light of the sun because it's feeding off of it. They find that there's a tail that's going straight to Venus, and it, you know. So they're trying to figure out what that tail is, then why it's going to Venus, why it skipped Mercury, and all this stuff. And at the core of this is a doctor who is a grade school teacher at this point, but you've come to find out that he was actually a serious scientist at one time that everybody rejected his idea, his big paper, and he wouldn't back down. And it was that not all life has to have water. You know, it doesn't have to be H2O or whatever as the basis for that. So that's why when they decide they're going to do something about this whole problem with the sun, they come to him because they read this paper of his, and they're thinking, well, if it's on the sun, there's no way it could be water, right? It would just, you know, evaporate or whatever. So that's where the story begins. And the story takes, I think, a lot of good twists and turns. I think it's a story that it tells it in nonlinear fashion without that being a gimmick. It actually, I think, works with the way the story tells itself, and all those kinds of things without, you know, getting too far into it. But what we find, you know, when we first start out, we're on the spaceship. And we're with Ryan Gosling being woken up out of a coma with really long beard hair, you know, beard and hair and all this kind of stuff. And he's kind of flopping around and whatever. And then we start going back and forth in the narrative. And he can't remember anything. He's trying to figure out, like, he's got certain things in his memory.
Amnesia from the sleep.
From the coma, yeah. And, you know, because he does some calculations, he goes, I must be a scientist, you know.
Yeah. So
it's pretty good. But, yeah, I really liked it, but I would like to, you know, get what other people think about this movie and, you know, what kind of, then we'll get into the parts that we really liked and why it, you know, kind of built on certain things. How about you, Dr. Tar? What did you think of this movie?
I really wanted to like it. I just saw those two lighthearted. I don't know how to describe it. Saccharine, just a little too. I don't think. No spoiler alert, but the alien that he comes in contact with, this is just so alien to us. It's just how it like evolves so quick. I know they had to condense it into a movie and all that stuff, but I don't even think it would understand any type of humor or anything that we could describe to it, because it evolved in such a different, you know. I love the idea of them establishing contact and communication in some form, but to suddenly thrust it into, you know, like they kept taking him onto the holodeck and stuff. I wish they would have kind of focused on the why things, you know, kind of bring it in a little more serious and what it ended up being. Does that make sense to you? I thought it was a little too sappy in some spots.
There's a lot of pathos, but there's a lot of seriousness too, though.
No,
I mean, they're
both
there for the same reason, and there's both a lot of gravitas.
Yes.
You know, and a lot of sadness.
And them being stuck in space, I thought it would have taken a little more time to develop than it just. I just think that, you know, we barely can talk to any human on Earth, you know, outside our sphere of influence, you know what I mean? The communication thing, I just, and being such an alien, two of them are so alien to each other. How do I put this? I like that they would be able to talk to each other if they could establish communication, but the way it happened so quick and what it ended up being, it just, it reminded me of like E.T. or something like that. You know, it just.
Was it too quick, too unearned?
Yeah. Wait, I think this is.
I mean, if you watch, like, was it Arrival? Was it Arrival where the aliens learned to communicate? You know, but that takes the whole point.
They came here to talk to us. Yeah.
But I think that's kind of not the point.
It was just too sappy for me. I didn't like that. And it was just. I wish it was a little more serious. You know, thinking of him, you know, he woke up, you know, and his crewmates are dead. He's stuck there. I mean, I know he knew what was happening, but it was just, and yeah. The tone was a little different.
I think that's the reason he acted the way he did is because he had spent the last few years with grade schoolers. You know what I mean? And he had an already very childlike, you know, disposition and stuff like that.
No, I understand.
And again, I'm not saying. I mean, I can see, you know, because I can see how somebody could go, oh, this is pretty saccharine, or I don't like this. Because if you go into, like, a lot of times with modern science fiction movies, we want science. You know what I mean? And like real science. And I don't think that's what this movie is about at all. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
But the book is. From what I understand, that was the gist of it.
It is, but you know, this is a movie. It's not a book, you know. And again,
right? I get it.
No. And Weir was actually not unhappy with what they did with taking the book and turning it into a movie. But I really just think this is a story about connections and stuff like that. And I think the ability to learn the language was because they had figured our language out already, because they were a little bit more advanced than we were. I mean, you could tell just by some of the stuff that they could do and how quickly that.
I guess my thing was like emotional. I know one thing that would trigger us would not trigger them. You know, it's like, it was my problem with this. It was just,
yeah, because I like that they established him as a communal being already, and he was very sad and distressed because all his crew was gone too, you know. And I thought it was interesting. That was an interesting part where the mechanic from his part was there and the scientist from ours was there, and so together that's, you know, what they did. That's how they paired up with each other.
I think it would have been interesting if they would have drawn out the communication, you know, trying to establish communication.
Well, I'm glad they did. Because it's not what the movie's about.
The movie's already
2.5
2 hours and 40 minutes. Yeah. So, that was my first worry. I'm like, oh, my God. Because I first saw it, like, when he woke up and he was disoriented, because we all are. And I love that beginning. I know I don't want to get too much into the nitty gritty, but
Planet of the Apes.
Shades of Planet of the Apes. That was my first thought. But I thought, oh, God, I hope this isn't just 2.5 hours of him alone on a spaceship. And, you know, I didn't want it to be Castaway, you know, or Robinson Crusoe. I'm like, oh, come on. So I'm really glad. I like the tone. Those kinds of movies just don't appeal to me. But I loved the tone of the movie. I loved the humor. I loved because the gravitas is so serious that. His character is like that. And we're seeing everything through his eyes. He doesn't want to be there. He's trying to figure it out like we all are. And that's what I love about it. We're being spoon-fed. And the nonlinear storytelling is how we also begin piecing things together.
Yes.
Right. But I guess it just happens so quick. I guess I would like to see more work into it instead of suddenly, you know, it's doing this. I don't know. I know it was,
you know, that was sudden.
I get it.
The way the movie is constructed, that could have happened in 8 months.
Yeah.
That whole thing.
You're not taking that into consideration.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
I am.
Well, you're not.
I am.
You're condensing it into something that it isn't then.
Even in those segments I'm talking about, I just don't think the establishment would have happened that quick.
I'm saying it's maybe it wasn't quick.
We don't know how much time.
In our estimation, because yes. They're condensing it.
They're editing it.
Right.
They're
right,
editing it yes. into our you know. And I have nothing wrong with. I have nothing wrong with that yeah. at all.
Because
like, I understand it. You know what you're saying. You know.
Yeah.
You know that. You know because I. You know they're.
I guess I would.
The science
like to
is kind more. Of lacking in this movie, and that bothers me to a degree. You know, but.
I guess that's
the way I looked at it, you know, and here again, you know, I went into watching this movie just, I said, I just want to see a science fiction movie that maybe I've heard is kind of good.
Yeah, that's yeah.
And so I watched it and I went and I didn't watch it all in one setting. I watched it in two sittings and well, and the second time I watched it, I didn't really watch all of it because it's too long. So I kind of fast forwarded it through the movie the second time just to see some of the scenes over again. I have a lot of criticism about it too.
Well, go ahead.
Go
ahead. What do you got? What do you think?
Well, no, it's kind of like you, it's a personal thing. I really dislike the music. That's where the saccharine comes in. A lot of saccharine music. And music where I thought, you know, here again, I know it's a movie. That's why I discounted this, you know, in my head going through it, because I do this in all practically every movie I watch. You know, I said, okay, I just got to live with it. And so I did. I just ignore it, you know, just kind of let it flow over me and watch the visuals and not listen. You know, the oral part just irritates me too much. So I'll concentrate on the visuals. That's a criticism, but that's a criticism of, as you guys know, many movies that I watch. This is practical. That this is one of a criticism, and these are almost every criticism I have are kind of minor. They're not, you know, like some big major. Because I like the. Let me just go back. I like the movie. You know, I had a good time watching.
I like the premise of it.
But
really
be quiet. I'm talking. Yeah. I like the movie. I had a lot of, you know, a lot of questions and things, but I just ignored them and just watched it and let it flow. And once Rocky comes into it, you know, I like the mechanics of that and how that all worked and how his ship looked and you know, said, yeah, fuck you, Gene Roddenberry, you know. you know, sentient life doesn't have to look like us, you know. I liked it, but it, like in the beginning, he's strapped to this thing. So these scientists who put him there have to know what's going to happen. They know that there's this cognizant dissonance that's going on when they first wake up. Why didn't they strap the motherfucker in? He's laying on this table and he rolls off this table. Come on. The first thing he wakes up, what's the first thing they do? They put these fucking razors right in his face. Come on. You know, nobody would do that. You wouldn't think to do that. That's comedy. That's there strictly for comedy. And sometimes that's wrong. And I didn't like that. So that's a reality that I thought was violated from the very beginning. Just general procedure. You know, yeah. The fact that he's inside the ship flipping buttons. Willy-nilly. Oh, yeah. Oh, what's this? And then, you know, that's what I said. They're all minor. They're all minor because they're just they kind of happen. Isn't there part of that I guess the comic relief, you know, aspect that, you know, keeping it a little more lighthearted than you know, absolutely, you know, totally serious. That, having said that, and that's about it. That's about it for my criticism. I liked it. I liked Ryan Gosling's performance. I think Rocky should win an Academy Award for Best Supporting Actor and Special Effects.
And Pat Rock.
Pat Rock.
Yeah. Well, that's practical, and the voice is done by the puppeteer.
Yeah, that's what you said. Yeah.
That's practical effects?
Yes. Yep.
Yes.
Yeah, Rocky is practical.
And
And there,
the travelings are done.
Part of it, yeah.
The sets are real, you know, like that glass and all that stuff that they constructed. And then there is some computer graphics, obviously. You know what I mean? So I think some of the stuff with the bending of the glass coming out and stuff, and when he does all that stuff. But everything that is Rocky is practical effects. You know, it's some guy who's operating it.
Is he operating it? Is it a remote control?
I'm not real sure. I think it probably is. Yeah, it probably is remote control or something like that. But I didn't really go into that.
I'm so impressed. Much more impressed than I thought. I just assumed it was CG, and I thought it was really good.
Yeah,
you know, it's kind of cool.
Which is a good thing that, you know, just aside. You know, I didn't care that it was practical or not.
Right.
You know, because CG is so good these days. Yep. If it's done well, I don't care. If it takes my imagination, I'm
same
there.
With practical.
But you know, knowing that that's a practical effect is just cool. That's just all there is to it.
Kudos to the filmmakers.
Well, and I think one of the reasons they were talking about is that acting is really hard when there's nothing there. You know what I mean? Or it's just a stand-in or some dude with a thing on his head.
That's from Ray Harryhausen movie.
Yeah, so that's why they would, you know, when he's there, he's reacting to what the puppet is doing. You know what I mean? So there's that actual physical interaction with all of that stuff. Yeah.
No,
that's
like, awesome.
So in other words, you're saying he doesn't have to be a good actor because he has to have that physical prop. Nah, that's a joke.
I just thought that was interesting.
He's good in it. I think he's good.
No, he's great. Yeah, that was awesome. I didn't know that. Thank you for telling us that.
I haven't seen him. I don't think he's been bad in anything I've seen him in. I think, you know, he's been in maybe some bad. He played great Ken in the Barbie movie.
Yeah, that was great. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I've not seen it yet. I don't want to see it.
No, me neither. I keep hearing it.
Oh, you guys, it's really fun.
It's fun.
Yeah, I'd like to see it.
It sounds like
Scooby-Doo stuff.
When you're in like Barbie world where everything is pink, and like that's, it's just so, because you know they built all that stuff, they ran out of pink paint globally to make this movie,
right?
And like, yeah, so like, and it's so perfect and spot on. Like Barbie world itself is great, and then the show, you know, the movie takes off. But I love the setting up of that.
Yeah, well, I do it's on my list to see. I just haven't seen it.
Sounds really fun.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And he is good, and as you said, Gadfly, he's really, really good in that movie.
Yeah,
I liked a lot in this movie. I liked a lot of the space shots. The cinematics are really good, you know, and the ship is, you know, it's very well done, you know, extremely well done. And that's,
figuring,
you know,
that
adds
it probably
to the
grew like Rocky did, though, too, you know, like don't you wonder about his technology, though? I think, you know, the idea of that, he's like what he's made out of, the ship itself could be like that, you know. It's just like,
I think they were implying, because he can weave metal like it's nobody's business.
Right.
You know, like,
so he can produce, it's almost like he can produce
it. It is. It
you can make that chain? Yes.
Right. That's what I thought. When I saw that he could do that, I thought, oh my God, this is how they make their ships. Because it looks like just a series of, like, you know,
nanobots almost.
Yeah. Or, you know, like.
But
like,
it could be their life form, you know, just.
Like rebar.
What it is he, when he first analyzes the metal or the substance, he goes, well, this is xenon or something, whatever. And he goes, that's a gas.
Xenon, yeah.
Yeah, so what they're, and that's what the environment, the atmosphere is, and they're weaving the atmosphere into an actual, you know, but it has to be really hot. You know what I mean? In their place, because I remember when he puts the tape measure and he's like, oh shit, because it's like really hot. I like the fact, again, that they had the mechanic and a scientist. And I attributed a lot of the stuff with his memory was because of how they reveal at the end, spoiler alert, that he was never trained to be in space, ever.
Right.
You know what I mean? He had no training whatsoever. And they were counting on the fact that the other two astronauts would be able to help him along. You know, but when, spoiler alert, when those other two astronauts die, you know, in the coma and stuff like that, then it goes, you know, and a lot of the comedy and stuff like that was, you know, again, it's just to kind of attract that broad audience. And I thought they were funny, and I just kind
of... I think that's my biggest thing. I don't mind a little bit of the humor. That's not what I'm saying, but it just got a little too much sometimes for me personally. That's all.
They had some small stuff that was funny that I loved. I love it when he's trying to escape the from the other ship because he's freaking out like anybody would, you know.
Right.
And then it follows him. And then he moves a little bit. It moves a little bit. And yeah. It moves like he does because he goes one, two, three. And then he goes one.
And if
two,
you think
three.
About it, it kind of looks like a spider.
Yeah.
It looks like a spider, which we all have reactions to spiders. Yeah. And it's just like, you know what? So I could see that really, kind of mess with you.
Yeah.
And then it's made of rock.
Yeah. When just, you know, the whole, the fact that he establishes himself as being a little bit more technical, they're more advanced, you know what I mean, in terms of what they're doing. And, you know, when they connect. And right. I love some of the miscommunications, you know what I mean? When they, before they do, he keeps pointing at the glass and he eventually gets pissed off. You know, he keeps saying all this stuff about he goes, oh, wait, you're pointing.
Right, because they're learning from one another.
Yeah, I would like to see a little more of that kind of thing. You know, where you kind of like,
when we were doing the intro, I was going to say, this is Professor Two Thumbs Down Feather.
Right.
Yes. Right, because you see him bend toward those things.
Dr.
He's like, no, it's like this. But by the end, he's like doing the same thing. Right.
Yes, I like that because it totally reverses the meaning, you know. Of that symbol that we've known forever, but that's part of the change, you know. That's a metaphor for the change that's going on.
Yeah,
and especially after, you know, he actually does communicate back with the Earth and everything, and which is all kind of pretty crazy.
Yeah, the
time frame is pretty crazy.
Oh yeah, well, and especially because his time frame is compressed because of relativity. Yeah.
Yes.
So by the time,
Interstellar.
Yeah.
You know, kind of compression and stuff. Yeah.
Because they were doing the idea was because they were doing such a heavy burn for so long. That's why they couldn't return. Was that they could reach eventually just below the speed of light. You know, so that they would be traveling that fast for a very long time until they needed to then slow down. And then it was great that they were using the whatever the astrograde or whatever it's called.
Astrophage.
Yeah. That stuff to fuel, which I thought was kind of cool, but how dangerous it was. I think the end of the movie is.
But isn't that the organism that's killing the sun?
Well, and it's even at the end, you know, again, spoiler alert, if you haven't seen it, watch the movie first. He's starting his voyage home because Rocky had some extra astrophage and said, it'll just take me 6 years longer to get home. It's okay. You know, and, you know, again, that whole scene was great, you know, and I think their friendship, the way their friendship grew, I thought was awesome, you know, and I thought that said a lot about their species because he was alone. He was lonely. He was sitting there, and his crew had died, and he's like, "I move in, roommates."
They got to that level,
The difference in this movie from almost every other movie ever, almost there's a few, is they're the same.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, they're just different species, but they're the same.
The enemy mine. Do you guys remember
the same?
That
one? The same. And that's the connection, though. You know, that's the whole, the whole purpose of this movie, I think.
Yep.
And also, and to say that through everything.
And to be positive, and that's why we're talking about a feel-good movie. This is an absolutely positive, a lot of downers in it, but it's an absolutely positive movie on a couple of different fronts, you know?
Mm-hmm. It is.
That's kind of interesting, talking about movies like that, though, like Enemy Mine and some other ones, too.
Yeah, Enemy Mine, I remember seeing that for the first time, and I was like, oh, that's really cool.
Robinson Crusoe on Mars.
I was going to say yes. I love
I know. That was a trigger. That was a trigger.
Let's talk about science. Let's talk about the science in that.
You know, they actually tried, though. You know, granted, they went on to the fantastic, but they actually consulted NASA for certain things, though, too. Did you know that? I think that's pretty. That's kind of cool.
Back to this movie, you were talking about how it's. Non-linear in his telling. I think all of the things that we saw, those were his memories coming back. Yep. So we're like watching his memory
fragments
come back, you know? Because in the beginning, he had almost no memory except for the math.
Mm-hmm. Right. And he's guessing at what he could be. He's like looking around. And he's like, he totally lost. Like, I'm in a ship. Therefore, I must be a scientist. I mean, he still just hasn't put it together yet.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, I kind of like that. But, you know, there could have been like, here, watch this video.
but he is kind
Here's
of
who you are. Here's what's going on. You know, why couldn't he have done that?
Well, I like the mystery challenge.
You're saying they should have foresaw.
They didn't have
situation.
They didn't have time
waking up
to do any of that.
Well, I'm thinking in the program.
He arrives at the
when they're going to launch. When they're going to launch, the two scientists have died because there was an explosion, right?
Right.
And they need somebody right now. Like right now, there's no preparation. That's why he was saying no, and they drug him and they put him in a coma. He doesn't have any of his effects like the other two astronauts do. You know what I mean? So he's going through their effects, you know, and, you know, he gives him a really nice send off. You know, I thought that was great. I owe you four bags of vodka. Sorry.
There would have been an AI kind of thing going on within the ship? I don't know. Something to
we don't know because it was like we don't know, and that seemed to be less important than getting there and solving the mystery.
I think that would have, because time's running out for them.
With the ubiquity of AI, that would have been easy to incorporate into the ship. And they did it to a degree, but not to the degree that it could have been done. So I think that's a scientific flaw. Never mind.
Maybe it's more of a storytelling.
The backstory is AI has gone out the window by this time.
Well, no, storytelling.
There is no AI because we don't really know what time this is.
They brought the Terminators.
Is the time frame present?
I don't think they really establish when it is.
I mean, everything looks pretty much normal when you go through the flashbacks and everything. It looks like our time. It looks pretty contemporary. So, I don't know. They don't really say, I don't think, do they, ever?
No. And again, I think a lot of these are just conceits, you know, that you deal with in the story itself.
Right,
But AI would ruin the essential part of the storytelling that makes part of the joy is the unlocking the mystery of discovery. And that's what, just like we're discovering the language between the two, the commonalities, we're also discovering the astrophage, because that scene when he gets out of the ship to measure the astrophage or to collect it, you just see it everywhere because he has a filter. And it's such a beautiful visual, like, oh my God, it's just, it's everywhere.
But the visuals had the AI.
But see, I liked it. I loved this movie. I loved the feel good. It pulled me through all the emotions. You know, spoiler alert, when Rocky died, I was heartbroken. I'm like, no. It was just to see the sacrifice. I'm like, oh my God. You know, it was hit me in the gut because I'm like, yeah, I was fully invested. Once I realized it was not going to be Robinson Crusoe, because I don't like those, or Castaway, because I just don't like those movies, kinds of movies, I was invested. And I love the nonlinear storytelling. I'm like, oh, this is great. Seeing the ship, I'm like, oh, that's such a cool ship, because it's not any spaceship I've ever seen in any sci-fi movie ever. Maybe something akin to the ships from the mothership from Close Encounters, with all those spikes and spindles and things. Yeah. But this was so foreign. And then the developing relationship, I just absolutely loved it. And then when you finally get to see the creature, it's like, oh, that's what that is. I'm like, because my mind, I'm thinking, oh, it's going to be
a
humanoid.
Here's my footstool.
And I'm so glad that it wasn't. No, I absolutely.
That's part of the statement of the movie. Yeah.
And I just thought, and seeing that relationship grow, it was beautiful. I loved the visuals. The comedy didn't bother me because it was part of the disorienting. When those things are coming down, I'm disoriented as well as a viewer. Like, okay, that's just visualizing my own confusion. I could see Terry Gilliam doing something like that to make the viewer uncomfortable. These things coming out at you and like, what's going on? You know, so that didn't bother me. I absolutely love the end when you realize, oh, because you know he can't make it home. I'm like, well, then what's? I thought well, maybe they landed back on the planet. Like, no, oh my God, they're spoiler alert, they're Rocky's planet, and how they have the dome set up and everything for him and what he's doing. That last shot of all the little kids, they're all excited and jumping up and down. I'm like, oh, fuck, that is... The payoff was beautiful. I mean, he was able to send back all the information.
I do.
There's hope. It's full of hope. And I think that's the underlying... There's hope in this movie. And that's, I think, what we need right now. But it felt good. And I went into it knowing nothing. Absolutely nothing. I didn't want to know anything at all.
I was the same way.
I'm like... And I saw it, the runtime. I'm like, oh my God. And I was watching it. I was watching it on real TV, so I couldn't fast forward, run it fast. I'm like, God, this would be really good at time and a half speed. I'm so glad I didn't, though. And I will watch this movie, and it's just wonderful, wonderful.
Just us talking about this stuff. I really do like, we've talked about a couple of these movies, the idea of encountering another intelligent, whatever, it doesn't have to be, you know, from outer space. You know, we've talked about a couple of these kind of movies, and I'm really fascinated with that stuff. You know, phase four.
And phase five, that's the sequel.
The sequel, right?
Yes,
more sugar.
And, yeah, I would like to show you that. I got the DVD, and they've got it on there. But anyway, they have like some cut scenes that they took it out of the movie because it was too weird.
Ant orgy.
It was like after the ants have taken over, everybody's like walking. It looks like an almost M.C. Escher type thing where businessmen are walking through these,
like an ant farm.
Yes, and it was kind of interesting.
Uncle Milton's.
Yeah. I've never heard of that movie.
But anyway, that idea
Phase four?
Of
yep. Ant Farm, Pee Wee Herman.
Yes,
yeah. Best ant farm ever.
But that idea of these alternate intelligent things out there. That was just I like that concept anyway in movies.
Well, I think Grace. I thought that was a great name to, you know, give him, Grace, because, you know, he wasn't necessarily graceful, but he, you know, he had grace.
And it also is a play off of Hail Mary Project.
Right. Yep. Hail Mary Project, which is, you know, again, I thought that was pretty good. I like the fact that Grace is able to make connections and use any information source that he can. So like when he has that bodyguard or whatever that's with him, and the bodyguard makes a suggestion and he goes, well, that's a good idea. You know what I mean? So and he does it. And so the result of that is they get their three astrophages to replicate, you know, because they recreate, Venus, the atmosphere of Venus inside of a box. You know, and just small stuff like that.
Box by Venus.
Well, you learn that astrophage is organic. It's alive. And it's water. Yes. Mostly it's water.
Too. And that idea of, and that, I like that idea of the idea that it's a organism that can live in outer space. You know, that whole.
Like a tardigrade. Like
but they use it as, a fuel.
Yep.
Yeah. They can them? Use it as a fuel. Yeah.
Does it kill does it kill the astrophage?
Yeah.
Does it?
Well, it converts it.
Yes, it becomes
like it converts
fuel.
It to what?
To energy, just, you know.
So it kills them.
Yes. But okay. Here's the thing. We're talking a mass scale of the sun. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, and we're talking a rocket. You know what I mean?
I thought it was a
and this is a
byproduct,
virus.
Not
this
a kill him. Like I thought it was just a byproduct. Because that's why they rotated them in that chamber. They could rotate it and they blast off and it produces that energy, then they just keep on rotating it. I don't remember that it killed them.
Yeah, I don't know either. Yeah.
Oh
yeah,
no, I don't either. Yeah. But it converted that's what them to energy.
They found out why they were alive there, and then they realized, it's like it becomes like an inoculation. Like they need that life. Whatever's going on, it's the life itself contains
the,
it.
The astrophage kind of like
is it prey?
Orders that, huh?
Is it prey? Don't you remember that from the movie?
Is it prey?
There's conversation between Rocky and Grace. Is it prey?
Oh, P-R-A-Y.
Yes.
Yes.
No, P-R-E-Y.
Yes.
Is it prey?
Well,
and they say yes.
Yeah. That's what. Okay. That's it. And that's what kills it. So I think the other stuff, it just transforms, it just shoots out energy out, and but they had to get so much of it to generate enough energy to push that rocket as fast as they could. And that's why they were needing so much of it. But I don't think it killed it, though, necessarily. Maybe because he did need more astrophage.
Yeah.
That's why he took it. So, I guess so. I just missed that.
I'm just thinking along science-wise. Yeah, there's a conversion there, and it probably did disassemble it.
I mean, that's what I said. It just brings in the dichotomy of reality. Here's a really nice sentient thing. Here's a sentient thing that's not so nice, so let's kill it because it's going to help us. I'm not passing judgment. That's just a statement on reality.
Do we know astrophage is sentient?
No, it is.
Really, I thought they said it. Well, they said it was alive.
Alive. Yeah.
Alive to me. There's some kind of sentience if you're alive.
Okay.
Not necessarily a human sentience, but there's a sentience.
Some kinds of awareness.
Yeah, connection.
If nothing else, but instinct.
Yeah. Right.
Okay.
But I'm just saying that that's the other side of the coin.
Mm-hmm.
Is all I'm saying. That you don't really think about when you're watching the movie either. It's not relevant. Yeah. It's something to talk about in, while you're drinking your vodka and tonic and smoking a lot of fucking dope.
And
yes, sir.
Or maybe it's in the book,
I didn't read the book and I didn't even know it was a book until yesterday. Because I was looking on Kindle. I finished my book. I just was reading, and I wanted to read something that I'd never read before, an author's I'd never read before. So I did a search on science fiction and in Kindle, and so all this stuff come up. The third selection was that book, the Hail Mary Project book.
Yeah,
that's cool.
Andy Weir was really popular when The Martian came out as a book.
Yeah.
It was huge. People, mm-hmm. everybody
and I
liked
The Martian.
That one too?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was his first book too. I'm not sure.
I think it was.
Oh, okay. It's a Robinson Crusoe story. Yeah, I mean, on Mars.
Robinson Crusoe on Mars.
I saw that once, and I didn't really. It was okay.
It's not
the kind of movie for me. It wasn't that it wasn't done well. Yeah. It's just not a movie that I want to spend time in. It's not entertaining for me to watch him figure things out necessarily in that cold vacuum.
I'm fully against poop-tatoes.
But way more scientifically accurate.
Yes,
The Martian was. I mean, that was the movie was incredibly.
I kind of enjoy that kind of stuff in movies.
That's a different
kind.
Different kind of movie. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think the hope of it. I just there was so much lightness and fun, and I am just so even more impressed now that knowing that Rocky was a puppeteer or puppeteered.
That
was amazing. I want to know how, because it was about 2 feet across. It wasn't gigantic,
right?
But
a lot of articulation going on.
Yes, and a lot of little things and body movement.
And
the three faces were different, like the three facets. It wasn't like a crab. He turned, and I'm like, oh, almost like you can give different responses, do different things depending on what side is facing the viewer. And I loved how we get to see the astronaut through the alien's eyes, the way the alien can look at things.
He sees in pressure and radio waves.
But they get to see that. And I think it gives us the sense of we're given empathy for both species share so much loss and threat. And so it gives us, we don't feel empathy for the astrophage because it's killing us, but we do feel empathy for Rocky because we realize, oh, Rocky's just like us.
And we have a common goal to solve, this problem. Exactly.
But after watching this, I saw on YouTube, there's a couple that talked about the actual biology of Rocky and how he evolved. And that was fun. I have to admit, that was kind of fun. Why he is what it is. He lives on this planet that's kind of like Venus, where the organisms evolve up here in the atmosphere but drift down in particles and stuff. Anyway, he becomes like the thing that lives around a vent, a volcanic vent, like a crab or whatever. And he's more like a jellyfish, or, you know, where it's like there's different organisms, but they all kind of work together and do what they do. Anyway, that kind of, I like that detailing, and I kind of wish they could have expressed some of that, you know, more into the movie. I understand, you know.
I
get it.
But I think that's also one of the things that I like about movies like this, that don't explain everything, because then you can go out afterwards and grab a beer or coffee with your friend or whoever you went to the movie with and start discussing and discuss it, you know, and say, what do you think?
Well, like, maybe we're
you
could doing
this.
yeah.
I think what I like is just some of the subtle stuff that they did with the character of Grace. And that was that he was very likable. You know what I mean? A lot of people, he had to walk into that room of all those scientists and, you know, they didn't like come at him except for the ones from somewhere else said, yeah, we've already replicated this, you know, and we prove it works. You know, what you're saying works with the astrophage. And then just how he built that relationship with the bodyguard. You know, he's like, do I have a budget? He's like, or expense account? He goes, no, but I do. You know, and they go off and they get all this stuff and then they build it. And then again, the bodyguard has another. He goes, well, just build a box, put it in another box, you know. And so that's what they do, you know, and it works. And when he gets the replicated astrophage, he comes out and he says, Carl or whatever his name is. He goes, we have a child or we've, you know. Those just stuff like that. But again, him... just kind of being the reluctant hero again. You know, there's a lot of these tropes.
No, I like that.
The greatest part, you know, about that whole this scene is when he says, no, I can't go. No, I can't go. And he's fighting it. I mean, he's fighting it. No, they have to actually subdue him. Yeah. I'm going, that's just fucking great. Because, and you know, they're saying, you know, well, you have to go because you're the only person that can do it, you know.
Yeah, well, I think it, you know,
and then the fact that he wakes up the way he does, though, too, that's pretty fun.
I didn't really think about it, but when they come to that part, which is pretty late in the movie, when before you see that he really is not any kind of volunteer hero, or anything, and it also explains why he doesn't have anything. You know, it just has that retro explaining that again. That's why when I go and watch it a second time, you go, okay, this makes sense. I see how they did this and constructed this, and it's really good.
He's the one that could actually connect, maybe with whatever.
Well, I don't even think they thought that.
That's the beauty of the writing.
Yeah.
Because they establish his you talked about it, Gadfly. They establish it in the opening scene of him being a grade school teacher.
Yes.
And being a really good grade school teacher.
Yeah.
The interaction, everything, you know right away. You know, and that establishes him for when he meets Rocky, you know, that he has that, you know, that ability. And yeah, and he just has that personality, you know, too. Yeah, it's that,
exactly.
You know, that.
Right. And, you have to think outside the box when you're teaching anyway. You know, you have to be able to be a jazz musician and deal with, you know, improvisation. But with the young kids, then it's a whole different thinking outside of the box. And so I think it's what makes him the perfect person for this role, because and he had the Rocky relationship. I mean, he has
that's
to be
the whole, that's the whole cosmic connection of the movie.
Yes.
You know, all those things that all add up to why he is the hero, why he is the perfect, you know, we can go and study our Joseph Campbell, you know, why he is that. And, you know, this movie establishes that very well. It's another reason I don't have any, you know, major criticism about the movie, because overall, you know, it's just it is a really good, uplifting movie. Hope isn't, to me, it's just positive. I guess hope is part of being positive. They established that, and the whole the Rocky thing, you know, I just kind of figured, oh no, he's not going to really die, he's going to come back, and he did. You know, so, and I went, okay, yay.
I think the reason I call the movie Hopeful is, and that he represents hope, is because at the very beginning he's talking to those kids and they're doing their lava thing, and they want to ask him about this, you know, what's going on with the sun.
Yeah.
And he's been trying to dodge that question. And they're like, no, 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 you got the lava. And he gives in. Yep.
And yeah, you got to answer.
Yeah.
Right. So he does. And he can't let those kids down.
Well, yeah. But then he sees that he's freaked the kids out. They're like now going, oh my God, we're all going to die. We're going to, you know, starve, blah, 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 and all that stuff. And he goes, no, there's always hope. We have the top scientists working on this. Well, we're very resourceful. Yeah. We are, you know, we can do all of this kind of stuff. Yeah. And I thought, well, that's, you know, that right there is him not just being, that's a real teacher, you know, because he's read the room and he's given them exactly what they need and said, this is going to, and then he becomes that, you know.
Yeah.
You
know, yeah. That that's why I said it's the true hero arc. Mm-hmm. I mean, absolutely formulaic. You know, in that you know, progression. But
Rocky, you know, is too. Rocky is
and
the
Rocky
hero.
Is too.
Yes, and yes, because they both sacrifice, give every, everything to the other. But I love that full circle.
I love
coming
all that,
back to him being teacher.
One more edge.
The excitement of the kids matched the excitement of his kids on Earth.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
They were all happy and excited, and those kids could see all the little trillings and all the different, you know, they were bouncing around, and like it was like
that's
most satisfying.
The full circle.
Yes,
that's
it
the
is
circle
the beauty of
the story. Yep. Yep. You know, and you know that's the, you know, that's good. That's
because you're thinking, oh my God, where is he going to go? Where is he going to land? That's the thing.
Yeah.
And like, how are they going to possibly survive? And then you realize, oh, he landed on Rocky's world.
Yeah.
And they built him this. Of course they did. Of course they did. Yeah. Because they see value in him. And Rocky's home. He says, let's do this.
Yeah, that's, you know, what I said. That's the whole.
Communicate to him why he was doing this. Yeah.
That's the whole positive aspect of the movie, you know, that, you know. Yeah. Everything doesn't have to be adversarial, you know, and if you look at our current society and what we like for entertainment, 99% of it is adversarial.
Yes.
It, you know, it's and that's, you know, I don't know. We could talk about
it's disconcerting
cultural psychosis, you know, and how it's created.
Yeah,
because we're monkeys.
Yeah, well, that's why I think that, you know, when there is a time here, just sitcoms go in cycles, you know what I mean? Where they're either really mean and you know, they stay mean, or there's something like Modern Family, you know what I mean? Where it's, you know, you see the dynamic of the family, but it always ends with this kind of positive note, you know, or something where they've, without being too saccharine about it. What I like about this alien, too, is I didn't realize this until I was watching it the second time. With that whole clock incident,
mm-hmm.
he doesn't see in two dimensions at all.
Exactly.
There are no two dimensions to him. It's only three dimensionality. You know what I mean? And that's so, like, when he's building things, he's communicating with sculptures and then on his, he's got like what are tattoos or etchings,
mm-hmm.
you know, that kind of show what he's doing. And I love the fact that I figured out right away that the ball with the little tail on it was, you know, a representative of, you know, that he had the same thing. You know, he was from another star. And Grace doesn't pick up on it until later, and he picks it up after a while, and he goes, oh, it's the Sikorsky tail. And he puts it back down. Because he keeps saying, he goes, you think I'm stupid, don't you? And eventually Rocky goes, what was it? The ramen noodle version of my ship?
I do like that idea that, you know, he could be Rocky himself could be wearing his own tech at the moment. You know, for him to translate, you know, our environment to him.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think that's interesting. And just
he made the environment suitable for the astronaut, which I thought was wonderful. The organic nature of it, just
and I
the
like
discovery. It takes the time to discover, because I'm like, I want to see the ship too. And I'm so glad he says, can I do anything before we go? Like, one last thing, he goes, I would love to see the inside of your ship.
Yeah.
You know, and then just taking the time, because there's a little bit of a relief because, oh, they discovered the solution. And like, it's a collective sigh. Like, and I wanted to see the inside of the ship. I wanted to see what it looked like. You know, and as well. So there were so many satisfying moments in this movie. It was like so surprising. And maybe that's why I'm just so delighted with it, because I came in with no expectations and they were blown out of the roof for me.
Yeah.
The
movie being as long as it is, I didn't have a problem with that until when the first time I watched it and he's like, oh my gosh, I have to go save Rocky because that stuff's going to eat his ship. You know what I mean? And I'm like, fuck, we've got this to go through now. You know what I mean? And they didn't. They just cut to, you know, him being on the planet. And, you know, there's nothing about that. It's just, again, another conceit. Shit happened, you know. That'll be Hail Mary 2.
Yeah.
The adventure to Rocky World. But yeah, as I said, a lot of those things, I think those relationships, I thought took the time to build, you know, like with the message. The first time they threw the message, it was really fast. And I was thinking, Professor Feather, I'm like, if that fucking thing makes a sound out there when it hits the spaceship and we're outside in space, Professor Feather's going to lose his shit and you'll hate this fucking movie. But they kept it silent out there. The only time you heard anything was in the spaceship.
Unfortunately, they kept it silent, but they used too much music.
Ah, gotcha, yeah.
But, you know, I understand the value, the psychological value of the music. Yeah. You know, for the normal person, that's, you know, that's a trigger. And, you know,
it's a normal person.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Music didn't bother me at all.
I like movies that don't have any music.
Yeah.
Unless the music is diegetic. That's fine with me. But if there's no extra diegetic music, I'm pretty well, even if it's the worst movie in the world, I'm going to like it because I'm going, sometimes I don't want that music. I don't want that extra push.
Yeah, to tell me how I should react to that.
Psychological push.
2001 did that so well. Yeah. With the spinning,
you just get that hiss, or the hiss sound of the respirator,
or something like that. Yeah, right. Yeah, I don't mind
but you
know, that internal, you know. But you're right.
For you, Reservoir Dogs would have been good because I think there's just the one song, "Little Green Bag," when they're strolling.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I think there's music. The movie has no music.
Yeah.
Unless they're like at the bar or the wherever they're that music. But
this movie.
No, Reservoir Dogs.
Reservoir Dogs.
That would be a movie that you like because it really lacks music.
There is very
except
very
for the
little
stroll with Little Green Bag, which is perfect.
Yeah, that's what I said. There's very little extra diegetic music. Everything is inside
and
the movie.
He did not like Shakes the Clown. With
he's pretty good at that for a lot. I think. I think he understands that absence of music. Tarantino. I think he understands.
Yeah.
Or likes it. I understands it's not the word. It's likes it too. You know, say okay. Mm-hmm. There's got to be times when you don't hit him over the head with the fucking music. The only thing I don't like about Tarantino is he hits you over the head with old music, because you know he's like stuck in that past. You know,
excessive dialogue at times.
At times it
goes on. Yeah, like the Death Proof. That was terrible.
Well, that whole movie was.
Could have been so good. It could have been if he had stalked those girls a little bit. No, we're getting way off the topic. We're getting way off.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah. So, anybody have any other thoughts?
Grindhouse, man. Grindhouse.
Yeah. Project Hail Mary. Anybody?
I think if you haven't seen it, we've spoiled a lot for you. It is still magnificent, a wonderful viewing, and the visuals were. I mean, I was pretty high when I saw it, but the visuals are just so amazing, and I was like. Ugh.
That discounts everything.
You're right. I mean, the visuals, we didn't talk a lot about, but they are pretty amazing. Yeah,
I love the interior of the ship, and the sets are gorgeous. It's like Luc Besson, the attention to the organic tube that connected the ships, all those things. There was just so much to it. I like the bleakness of the scenes when they're like when the ship's gonna be launched and it blows up. I mean, there's a bleakness, and later on when they receive the information, you know, it's years later because she's gray, you know, the woman that got him in there, and she's got gray hair, and it's bleak. Everyone's bundled up. You can see, they are in a much colder environment. That little bit, because she's only on screen for 30 seconds.
Yeah.
It's just packed, but it's all there. And the subtlety.
I am a fan.
It's just an absolutely wonderful film.
I am a fan of a totally alien creature, though. You know, something that's not carbon, it's something else.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, Rocky's great.
Silicon. Yeah, I do like that. And I like the budding of that, you know. Yeah, that's
well, we awesome. We forget that's a major part with Grace is his whole paper was about life that was not water-based. And when they when he does the analysis of the astrophage, he's like, oh, it's water. And he goes, I'm wrong. I've been wrong the whole time.
And that's interesting because they find, you know, in all the astronomy stuff with all the telescopes on, they're so much water itself dispersed through everything. It's just, yeah.
Hydrogen is pretty common.
Yes.
You know, it's just oxygen. A big
chemical bath.
And they bind so well. That's why. You know?
Yes.
That's fucking physics, man.
Yeah.
Fucking physics. Well, I saw where they, what was it? It was like some.
Is this about the movie?
No. But they did find molecules where that would create the smell of like strawberries, like at the core of the galaxy, which I thought that was kind of a unique thing to say.
The galaxy smells like strawberries.
I hope cool. They found sugar.
Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, strawberry, I know, right?
Universe.
That's why you have to bring it.
But this other galaxy smells like fucking absolute shit.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
How about you, Professor Feather? Any final thoughts?
No, I've pretty much said everything. If you have, you know, if you're listening to this and you hadn't seen the movie, it really, the spoilers, that's okay, because at least you know that it ends good.
Yeah.
It ends well. So no matter what happens through the movie, you know, okay, it's all going to come out in the end pretty well. And it's a good journey.
Yeah.
You know? Just enjoy it.
Thumbs down.
Yeah. And you'll get it. Yeah.
And go see Robinson Crusoe on Mars, too.
Nah, maybe.
No.
Yes.
All right.
Yeah, you guys want to watch me take a dump? Say! Unsane Radio at gmail.com. Unsane Radio on Facebooks.com.
Com.
Yes. TarnFeather.com.
.com.
Yeah. TarnFeather Psycho Cinema on YouTube. On YouTube.
.com.
It's not .com.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, it is probably somewhere. Anyway, that's it.
.com.
Heavy Metal Horror Podcast.com. Heavy Metal Horror Podcast is on the Facebooks.
Heavy Metal Horror Podcast
is on the YouTubes. Montag Lewis is at the Instagram.com. And We Freaks, WEEFREEKZ, family friendly webcomic on Facebook, written and drawn by our own dear Blue Fez, John Boise.
So,
gadfly.com.
Where are you
.coming at? It's .coming and going.
It's midnight .comrade.
Oh, you dirty red.
No, not dirty.
On your...
No, not dirty. Not dirty. Say it isn't so. It's not dirty.
Not dirty.com.
You're well douched.
Welldouched.com.
And remember, if you have problems with this podcast, email jerry@trick.com. That's jerry@trick.com. Jerry@trick.com.
Jerry's attic again.